Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, the Irish Data Protection Commission has published its annual report for 2024. Graham Doyle joins me shortly to talk through the detail. And Derek Riley, our old pal of Nevo.ie, will join me to discuss autonomous electric vehicles. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram @JessKellyNT. But we're going to start this week with that report from the Irish Data Protection Commission. I often cite the DPC. I'm a big fan of GDPR. I think the work that they do is not pretty, but it is very, very important. And as I mentioned there, Graham Doyle of the Irish Data Protection Commission is with me now. Graham, it's always great to chat with you and indeed members of your team. Before we get into the detail, can you just explain a little bit about the importance of the annual report and why you do it?
First of all, thanks very much, Jess, for having us on again. It's always great to chat with you. So we published our 2024 annual report today, and I think it is really important because, it's very important that we're transparent with the public, that they understand exactly what the DPC does. Quite a lot of the focus and quite a lot of the attention that we get is in relation to all the work that we do around big tech. But actually, when you talk about, say, complaints that come to the office, it's only around 15% of the complaints that we do receive here at the DPC that it actually relates to big tech platforms. Individuals who come to us, and we had complaints was we had 11,000 new cases this year, and just under 2,500 of those turned into actual formal complaints. And really what people complain to us about are issues, and the biggest issue, and it's been the same issue, Jess, year on year, it's they're trying to get access to information that an organization holds on them. It's quite often, an employer-employee issue. There's been a breakdown of a relationship. There's disciplinary issues taking place, and the employee is looking to get access to, say, their personnel record, or could be somebody looking to move from one health service provider to another, or insurance company to another. And they look to get access to their records, and they're having difficulty. They're not responding to them and not providing them with information. So as I said, is the highest driver of complaints to the office. And I think it's important that we outline this in detail in our annual report every year. We give it, it's when you look at the report itself, it really is a broad overview of every area within the organization, what we do. We have breach notifications that we receive, mandatory breach notifications from organizations. And this year what we found is an increase of 11%. We've had over 7,000 breach notifications notified to us this year. And again, I think it's important. The annual report is an opportunity for us to kind of give a bit of a narrative around those statistics. And it gives, the likes of this opportunity to chat with you today to kind of let people see what these findings are. So if you take the breaches, for example, the sectors that we are getting the most breaches from again this year, and the top 10 areas are within both the public sector and the banking sector. And then they're in the top 20 prominent are the insurance sector and telecommunication sector. And the breaches that we receive, Jess, still today, over half of the breaches are coming from human error. It's information being given to the wrong individual. So it could be that you have just an individual case whereby looking to send correspondence to Jess Kelly, but actually you send it to Graham Doyle instead. And something, you may ask in some circumstances, well, is that a big deal? And it may not necessarily be too big a deal. If I'm sending you, a bit of marketing about a football match that's going to be shown on television, and I send it to Graham Doyle instead of Jess Kelly, okay, it's gone to the wrong person, but maybe not a big deal. Certainly not as big a deal as if you were sending Jess Kelly out her health data. But you actually send it to the wrong person, and there's significant issues there. So there's a lot in this kind of area, and you know, this gives us, the annual report gives us an opportunity to kind of get that message out, and also to remind organisations of the importance of, you know, training their staff, making sure their staff are aware of all of this, and to kind of remind people to just take a moment when you're putting that letter into an envelope, when you're sending out something on email, just double, triple check that you're sending it to the right email address, for organizations to make sure that they kind of are looking at any legacy IT systems, because sometimes this is what the issue is. There's legacy systems there and systems are not updated. Mm-hmm. And then at the other end of it, we also have, you know, more systematic and bigger issue breaches, whereby there are these phishing attacks or hacking attacks of organizations, and data is gathered through that. And you know, that would be a breach notification would come to us. And part of what we look at then is, well, what kind of organizational and technical and security measures has that company got in place, or that organization got in place, for when these kind of issues arise, and also how do they react to it? So when you've had a big breach through such an attack, how do you actually respond? Do you shut down the system straight away? Do you communicate with individuals who are potentially impacted? And there have been a number of those over the last 12 to 18 months. And again, they're the types of things that kind of get a lot of attention, a lot of media attention. And then obviously we do have the whole big tech side of things, which gets a lot of focus and a lot of attention. So it is an opportunity for us to once again get out there. And I know, Jess, I've spoken to you about this before. The focus of our investigations and the conclusion of our investigations, the focus and attention more often than not kind of rests on the fines and the level of fines that were imposed. And again, last year we imposed over 650 million. Of fines. But I suppose, again, this gives us an opportunity to detail in the report some of the corrective measures that are imposed. And these are really, really important. So in nearly all of the investigations we conduct, yes, there would be an administrative fine, and that's really important and it has its place. But also we impose what are known as corrective measures. So this is what really changes behavior. So this is a couple of examples that I can give you in recent times. So we did two investigations, one into Instagram, one into TikTok, both in relation to children's processing. And one of the big issues in these investigations was that children, when they go online, and we might come back to children a little bit in terms of the public attitude survey, because this is a real concern for the public. But children, when they're online, we had an issue at a point in time whereby their information was set by public by default. So therefore, you know, you could get access to phone numbers, email addresses, etc., which presents significant risks, as you can imagine. So we conducted the investigations, we made findings, we imposed fines, and we imposed corrective measures, and we then supervised the companies to make sure that they put those measures in place. So in both circumstances with Instagram and TikTok, it's now it's set by privacy by default for children. So, you know, the same issue doesn't arise. And I think it's important to note that, because, you know, we've imposed over 4 billion euro of fines since the GDPR came in. To date, only 20 million of that has been collected. And the reason for that is that the majority of the cases are still subject to appeal before the courts. But notwithstanding, and without prejudice to the appeals that the companies have made, they have, in the majority of cases, they have actually, as they say, they've complied with our orders that we've told them, the changes that they need to make. And I think this is really important, because they say the fines is one element of it, but actually change behavior, changing the way we can all interact and our children can interact, and in other cases, the general population can interact on social media, is really, really important.
Yeah, so great. Just to pick up on that point there briefly, because this is something that I think you and I have spoken about, and I've spoken to other people within the DPC as well. Like, ideally, the fines, like, obviously there has to be a penalty, but it's the corrective measures, and it is that changing in behaviours. So whether you are a small business or a big tech company, you need to take people's data and privacy and data protection seriously and learn from mistakes that have been made. Because ideally, you know, next year's report will be blank and there'll be nothing because we'll have learned and it will be firmly addressed. When you say that you sort of supervise the implementation of corrective measures on big tech, does that mean that all the corrective measures that you have issued have now been implemented regardless of an appeal over the financial side of things?
Most of them. There's still a few. So if you take the example of, we've had a recent case there this year actually with TikTok, and it's to do with transfers of data to China. So what happens is we impose the corrective measures, and then the company is obliged to follow those corrective measures unless they actually go to the courts and get a stay on that. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding their appeal, they must look for a stay on the requirement to comply with the measure, or else they have to comply with it. And as I say, in the vast majority of cases, they have complied. TikTok, as an example, there we made a finding against them in terms of transferring data to China, certain data to China. They have gone to the Irish courts. They have sought a stay, which we are going to challenge. But the hearing date for that is not until September. But normally what happens, Jess, is we give a period of time for the organization to actually comply with the order. In the case of TikTok, we've given them 6 months. Now the clock has stopped now at the moment until the court hearing. But another very recent example, obviously, is the public services card and the biometrics investigation. That was announced recently. The decision was announced recently. And as part of that, there's an administrative fine, but there's also an order for the Department of Social Protection to bring that processing into compliance and to fix what is a lacuna. There's a gap in legislation, and we've given 9 months for that to take place. And we'll obviously be monitoring and engaging with the department in the meantime. So the answer is yes. In the vast majority of cases, the corrective orders that have been imposed as a result of the decisions have been followed.
Okay, well, that is good to hear. And again, it's all about that thing of learning from previous mistakes. You mentioned there about children's information, and we know, like this week alone, there have been numerous reports from the likes of CyberSafe Kids. There's been further research from the ESRI, from DCU, relating to children and smart devices. But when it comes to children's data and children's protection online, what are the key areas that have fallen on your desk in this period that's covered by the report that are of concern and that have seen remedies of some description?
Yeah, well, I think the two that I've mentioned already did fall in this period of the report. So was the Instagram and the TikTok inquiries themselves finished in 2023? We have been supervising the corrective measures that we had imposed. That's what we've been doing throughout 2024. So, you know, there's two examples of significant changes that will really help to protect our children online in terms of moving the default settings to privacy as opposed to public. We're also doing, like you mentioned, CyberSafe Kids, you mentioned the ESRI. We've been doing a huge amount of work in this whole space, Jess, as you and I have spoken about before, and you've spoken with some colleagues of mine. We have a dedicated children's policy area here at the DPC, and we're engaged with all of these bodies ourselves. We've done a lot of work with the Ombudsman for Children. We're currently actually doing a piece of work that has started over the last number of months with the French Data Protection Authority, in relation to protecting children online from a data protection perspective. But we're also moving into the space now, and I think this is really important. We're moving into the space as regulators, as digital regulators, whereby it's no longer the Data Protection Commission alone in this space dealing with, you know, the GDPR, which was the only show in town. We've now got the Media Commission involved, and there's a lot of issues with the, you know, Digital Services Act. So there's a lot of engagement going on between ourselves and Commissioner Mann or the Media Commission, in particular in the space of children. So it's a really, really important area for us, Jess. There's been a lot and a lot of work done, and there's a lot more work to do in this space. We also published a toolkit for schools to help schools in the, you know, understand their obligations as significant data controllers of significant amounts and types of information in relation to children. And I think that's it. You know, again, that's a huge part of the role that we have that doesn't get enough emphasis in my mind. It's not all about fining. It's not all about conducting investigations. The role of a data protection authority is also to provide guidance to companies, to schools, to help them to help them kind of know what good looks like. And that's something that I hear quite a lot of. You know, yes, we can read the decisions. We can read the investigations. We can see where somebody has done something wrong. But can you kind of help us with what right looks like? So we have a lot of guidance in this area that we've produced, and there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, and education is a key part in this for everyone. Again, in the past, you and I have spoken about if you're managing a GA club or a football club, you need to be aware of these things in terms of WhatsApp groups and photos and all that kind of stuff. And the thing is, the fact that your office exists means that there is somewhere that people can turn to if they are looking for guidance or advice. Another area that often comes up on the Pat Kenny Show is in relation to video doorbells, like what are the rights and wrongs and using that information. It seems to me that, and people in here always take the mick out of me because I'm always quoting and citing GDPR, but it does seem like that message, the messaging and the work that your office did around that has landed, and people are more aware now of their rights, and they're also more cautious. Is that reflected in some of the sort of puntery complaints that have landed on your desk, that people are fighting for themselves?
Yeah, absolutely, Jess. We've actually seen a significant increase in complaints in relation to domestic CCTV and Ring doorbells. So I think individuals are more aware, and again, this is shown true in the public attitude survey. Individuals are more aware of their rights. I think where we need to do a bit more work, and it is something that we're working on over the summer months, and we're going to produce guidance, is actually for the people who are being complained about. So it's actually for you, if you are, for me, if I've got CCTV or if I've got a smart doorbell, that I understand what my obligations are and my, I suppose, responsibilities. So there's case law at the European Court of Justice in a case called Orion's case, and it actually has found that there's a thing called a domestic exemption. So if you have domestic CCTV or you've got your Ring doorbell, and as long as it's confined to your boundary, so the boundary of your garden, and it's not out in a public area, you can avail of the domestic exemption. Therefore, data protection doesn't kick in. Data protection law doesn't kick in. However, and to be honest, I think lots of people who buy CCTV or these smart doorbells probably don't know that. And the reality is there's lots of people. I have a smart doorbell at home. I only want to see who's in my porch when they knock at the door. I have it focused that it only shows me with inside my own garden. Now, if I didn't know about data protection, I'd probably just have it, you know, pointing in a certain direction. I'd see who's outside, but it might be out in a public area. We, as I say, we have a bit to do here to kind of inform people of their obligations. So if you are focusing cameras, domestic cameras, on public places, you do take on the responsibilities that go as what's known as a data controller. So it's the same as an organization that have CCTV cameras pointing outside and for security purposes. So that, I think that's something that we're working with at the moment. We're going to produce something of a kind of a fact sheet or a checklist. So as when we get complaints in about Grain Doyle and the fact that Grain Doyle has CCTV and I believe it's pointing in my garden. And I should also say, Jess, sometimes these complaints are coming as a result of some sort of neighbour feud. And we see quite a lot of that. But notwithstanding the motivation behind it, when we get these complaints about Grain Doyle, we want to move to a position whereby we're sending Grain Doyle out a bit of a checklist. Just say, look, we've got this complaint. These are your responsibilities and obligations. You know, make sure that you have a focus in your garden. If you don't have a focus in your garden, these are the responsibilities that you have. And you're supposed to, if you are purposely focusing on a public place, you're actually supposed to have signage up that says that's what you're doing. And then individuals have rights. I have rights then. If you're focusing on a public place, I have a right to seek access to information. So access to coverage that you might have of me out in a public place. So, yeah, I think like it's a really good question you're asking. It's really clear to us. It's become clear that people are definitely more aware as individuals that they have somewhere to go if they're not happy with this in this area. But I'm not quite sure that the individuals on the other end or the people being complained of are as aware of their responsibilities.
Yeah, and again, what I would say, and I've said it before, but on the DPC website, there is a section there and there is good information of what you need to know when it comes to the video doorbell, because it is handy. Like I have one. It's very, very useful. The Google one that I use lets me draw a parameter zone. So again, if you're standing outside that parameter zone, I don't get a notification. But if you're inside that parameter zone, I do. There are things you can do. You just need to do a bit of digging, I suppose, to get your head around it. Stay with me, Graham, because when we come back, I want to get into that public attitude survey that you mentioned there in a little bit more detail. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email if you have any questions. We'll be right back.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Graham Doyle of the Irish Data Protection Commission is with me. Graham, before the break, you mentioned the public attitude survey, and there was one of the findings that kind of jumped out at me because it's something that I'd spoken to the National Cybersecurity Centre about previously, and that relates to organisations that are found to have either mishandled public information or customer information, or been at the heart of a cyber attack. And the National Cybersecurity Centre said to me before that, you know, businesses fear the reputational damage that comes as a result of a hack, attack, a leak, or whatever it might be. Therefore, they're not reporting it, which isn't great from a crime point of view, a crime statistics point of view, a help point of view. But then I'm sure that impacts the information that lands on your desk. Are you seeing companies fulfilling that obligation that they have to alert your office if and when something goes awry?
Absolutely. Like as I said earlier, Jess, we've seen an 11% increase in the number of breach notifications that come our way. I was asked this question before and I gave a similar answer, and somebody then said to me, but how would you know if you're not receiving breach notifications? And yeah, there's validity to that angle as well. But one of the other areas that we look at it, so obviously quite often the media will report on something big. And if we haven't heard from the organization in relation to it, we will always reach out to them and say, we're aware of this issue. Can you let us know what's going on? Equally, we also receive complaints. We call them breach complaints, or label them breach complaints, but they may be complaints from members of the public who become aware that a breach has occurred. And there are occasions whereby when we look at them, we realise we actually haven't received a breach notification. And again, we reach out to the organisation and try and understand exactly what's going on. But I think you've really hit the nail on the head, Jess, with something that's real. It's a real bugbear of mine. When I'm out speaking with organisations, one of the points that I always try and make to them is you're missing a trick if you only try to comply with data protection legislation for the sake of complying with the legislation in and of itself. Yeah. Because there's a huge, huge amount to be said for the whole consumer trust piece. And in particular, in such a competitive environment where, depending on what sector you're in, you're competing with so many others to try and get new customers. And it is something that we see, and it's something that we hear of, that people will walk with their feet if they feel that their own personal data is not being protected. And actually, in the survey that we did, almost 2 in 3 people claimed that they would trust an organization an awful lot less if they found out that they misused their personal data. And only 4% of people claimed that it would make no difference to them. So, you know, there's significant messages in that. So, yeah, I'm with you on this, Jess. I think it's a really important thing. It's really important that we get the message out. Again, go back to your very, very first question here was in relation to why do we do annual reports and surveys such as this. It's really important that we get this message out so that industry hears it and individuals hear it, and we can keep pumping the same message, that message out.
Yeah, I'm loath to bring it up, but I need to. Elon Musk has been very critical of the European Union, our regulations and our legislation. Obviously, X is a significant operation. There have been massive changes on the platform. There have been massive changes in terms of their safety and trust teams and a whole host of other teams. How is managing them going from a regulation point of view? Do you have healthy interaction with them? Are they complying with rules and regulations?
Well, we engage with X in the same way that we engage with all of the tech platforms. We have regular meetings, regular interactions on new product services, etc. So there is a team there that we still engage with. As you'll see from the annual report, you'll be aware yourself anyway, Jess, last year we had a big issue with X in relation to the development of their Grok model. We actually had to bring them for the first time. We had to use our powers to bring them to the Irish courts to get to seek an injunction and to get them to stop processing a particular subset of data that they were using to train the model. And X gave us an undertaking that they weren't going to use it and that they would delete the information that they had. And look, we continue to get complaints about them in the same way that we get complaints about other tech companies. And we are engaging with them from a data protection perspective, with the data protection officer and the data protection team that they have. Like, there's been a lot of noise in this space. I'm only back myself from DC about 2 months ago now. I was in DC, and you know, there is a big, I've noticed a big change myself in atmosphere over there in comparison to the previous years. I'm over there most years, and a lot about, you know, tariffs and trade wars. And then there's a lot of talk about EU regulation inhibiting innovation. And to be honest, I would, that's not the case, Jess. It doesn't inhibit innovation. In fact, it's about helping responsible innovation. So that's what regulation does. And whilst, and I understand, I'm in this game long enough, I understand that the stories that make the headlines are about the time whereby we have to bring X to court to get an injunction, or we have to have a battle with Meta in relation to AI, or whatever it might be. They're the stories that make the headlines. But there's so much innovation that's happening through engagement with our office on a day-to-day basis, both with big tech, with the public sector, with other SME organizations. So, you know, notwithstanding what's gone before, notwithstanding any of the I suppose commentary that's come from certain sectors, we just continue to do our job. We continue to engage with the platforms, and kind of the noise, any of the noise that's there, you know, in terms of what you mentioned earlier on, you know, we're kind of, I won't say we're oblivious to it, but we just kind of we don't take heed of it, because that's all it is for us. We've got a job to do. We've got GDPR, Data Protection Act. We've got legislation there that we work to, and we don't. We just turn a blind eye, I suppose, to what's being said.
I suppose, and we're up against the clock, so this will be my final question to you. But I say this all the time on the show, in that we're still playing catch up on the impact of social media. They had such a free reign for such a long time, and what we're seeing being done over the last 5 or 6 years is now corrective measures based on trying to put manners and boundaries on platforms that had free reign to our data, our attention and all the rest. My view would be that by having things like GDPR, the Office of the DPC, Commission Naman, the Online Safety Commissioner, EU legislation, we're kind of in a better position when it comes to AI than we were with social media, because we've learned lessons and we're implementing changes and all the rest. So my view, and I would imagine you'd agree, is that while there will be challenges, and I'm sure that there will be findings and fines and all the rest about AI, we are in a better position to tackle this issue head on rather than playing catch up, which in my opinion was the case for such a long time with the social media companies.
Absolutely, yeah. I fully agree with you. I think we've lots of lessons learned. Like, we've been engaged with AI now for about two and a half years, just predominantly through the lens of data protection. But now with the new EU AI Act coming down the tracks next year, absolutely, there's lots that we've learned in how we go about our business, and how we communicate with the public, how we engage with you guys as media stakeholders. And there's an awful lot we've learned through the last 7 years that will stand us in good stead. The big thing, and it's something that we've been all working at, as I said earlier, for a period of time now, is the whole kind of the wider digital regulator cohort that we work together. We're going to have different roles under the EU AI Act, but you know that we work together and we make sure things don't fall through the cracks. I fully agree with you, Jess, and I echo what you say. I think given the experience that we've had and what we've been through so far, and like we've stood up the GDPR in 7 years. You know, there's a lot of negativity at times around the GDPR and around data protection, but you know, our survey shows us that people believe that it's really important. There's been a significant amount of enforcement. There's a significant amount of guidance being produced right across the EU. You know, we've got these professional data protection officers and organizations, thousands upon thousands of organizations that weren't in existence pre-2018 and the GDPR coming in. So we're in a really, really good, we're in a good place. We've still a lot more to do, but we're in a good place. And I agree with you, yeah, it'll stand us in good stead now as we move into kind of the next level when it comes to AI.
Graham Doyle of the Irish Data Protection Commission, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk. Now, when we come back after the break, Derek Riley is going to join me to talk about autonomous electric vehicles.